We're going to talk today about Hilchos Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah and the brachos on the Neiros Chanukah. I think it's very important that we get into it. As we know, we're going to be celebrating the first night of Chanukah on Sunday evening. At least all of you will be celebrating and lighting, and I'll be somewhere else. I'll have to light at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. But Amir Tzashem, I'll have the opportunity, as we all will, to make the brachos on the Chanukah candles and to light and to celebrate together as families or as a community, as friends. So let us look at the Rambam. In just framing what the mitzvah of lighting Neiros Chanukah is all about, the Rambam says as follows. Mitzvos Neiros Chanukah, and this is a very unusual terminology that he uses, but he says, Mitzvos Neiros Chanukah, when we talk about the mitzvah of lighting the Chanukah candles, that you should know is a mitzvah chaviva hi ad ma'od. You should know that that is a very beloved, a very celebrated mitzvah. Vitzarach ha'adam lihizahar ba. And people need to be very careful to observe it. I wonder every year, I get so many questions from members of my community who ask, I'm flying here, I'm flying there, I'm going to miss the opportunity to light candles because I'm not going to be at home and I'm going to be on a long flight and I'm not going to be in the hotel yet and the hotel's not going to let me light or I'm going to be in the airport. So these are all questions that we need to ask ourselves before we book the ticket. The Rambam says here, Tzarech Adam lihizahar ba. A person needs to be very cautious, very careful about Neiros Chanukah. That doesn't just mean that if I'm home, I should make sure to take care of my obligation and not to be lax about it. It means that if I'm planning a trip to the Bahamas, I should make sure that I do it in a way that I'll be able to light Neiros Chanukah. I have to think about that in advance. And it's not something that I should be confronted with the last second and try to figure out, well, how am I going to get around it? Somebody just called me the other day, and they said, well, we're going to be flying to Eretz Yisrael. So again, you're not going to the Bahamas, you're going to Eretz Yisrael, which is amazing. And the problem is that they're not going to have the opportunity to light candles at all. I said, why not? Your flight to Eretz Yisrael is at 11 o'clock at night. So why can't you light at 5:30 in the afternoon or 5 o'clock? What's the issue? Well, the issue is that they're flying from California. So they're taking a direct flight from California. Not a direct flight, taking a flight from California to New York, and then from New York to Eretz Yisrael. And as a result of that, they're not going to be able to light in California, obviously. They're not going to have a house to light in here in New York. And they wanted to know, are they able to light Hanukkah candles on the plane? Now, how can you light Hanukkah candles on the plane? You can't light fires on a plane. So that's not a good idea. So obviously that is not what they were asking, right? You see in all the bathroom stalls on the plane, it says, if anybody lights a fire, if you light a match, you're going to be, you know, maximum prison sentence, whatever it may be, lethal injection, whatever they give you, right? It's like very serious. I don't know why that's considered to be the most serious avera ever, but it's something that they take very seriously. So obviously lighting Hanukkah candles on a plane would not be something that is permissible. However, they did want to know, would I be able to light an electric menorah on the plane in order to have some semblance, some kind of feeling of Hanukkah. And there's no problem with bringing an electric menorah on the plane. I mean, you may disturb your neighbors by having lights lit up by your seat, but assuming that you can get around that and figure out how to do that, that is a very interesting question. So they wanted to know, can we light the Hanukkah candles in JFK Airport before we leave? Just go off to the side somewhere, plug in the menorah, and twist the bulbs and turn it on. That's question number one. And if that doesn't work, would we be able to light it on the plane? It's an interesting question. It's discussed by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and some of the other great leaders of the previous generation. It's not so simple to do such a thing. As we're going to see, let's hold on to that question. We'll get to it in a few minutes. But I think it's the point being, if the Rambam says Tzarech Adam Lihizarba, means we need to be mindful. We need to be thinking about it before we make our plans, before we arrange to go somewhere. We have to think, how are we going to be able to observe the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah, which, by the way, was one of my major concerns when I agreed to go to this thing on Sunday, because I'm not going to be home at the time of Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah. I have 5 children and a wife at home, and aside for them, I have my own obligation to light Neiros Chanukah as well. So these are calculations we always need to make, and there are different considerations we have to keep in mind. So the Rambam says, what is the purpose of lighting the Chanukah candles? Kidei lehodia hanes. The reason why we light the Chanukah candles is that in order we should have the opportunity to publicize and promote and broadcast the miracle. Ulehosif b'shevach hakel v'hodaya lo. And to use it as an opportunity to thank and to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu al hanisim sha'asa lanu. on all of the miracles that he did for us. And that means not only the miracles that he did for us so many thousands of years ago, but the miracles that he continues to do for us today as well. It's what we say in Al HaNisim. We talk about the miracles from long ago, and then we say, Bayam HaMahem, Azman HaZeh. Same way there were miracles back then, we believe there are miracles that happen in our lifetime today as well. And that, the Rambam says, is something we need to think about. So I always wonder, when we light the Hanukkah candles, there are people who just light, and then they say, okay, took care of my obligation, move on with the night, do whatever I have to do. It's important to try to take a few minutes as we light the Hanukkah candles to just focus and to think a little bit about what it is that we're supposed to be promoting, what it is that we're supposed to be considering as we do this mitzvah. Number one, the Rambam says we have to think about the proclamation of the nes of the miracle that was. And number two, the Rambam says to use it as an opportunity to thank and to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is why there's been a national initiative, and I think it's so beautiful. I think it's called Lights Out for Lights On, something like that. No, something like that. Where they turn off to turn on. I don't know, something like that. Where they're encouraging people that for 30 minutes after you light the Hanukkah candles, turn your phone off. Something we don't often do. Turn our phones off. Allow ourselves to have some focus. Don't be distracted, especially if you're going to be with your family and you have the opportunity to spend time together. It's a special time. It's a special time not only to joke around and play dreidel, but also to have the opportunity to think about what it is that Hanukkah is meant to represent for all of us in our life and in our experience. So the first question we need to think about whenever we discuss any mitzvah is, who has an obligation to do this mitzvah? There is a general rule that determines which mitzvahs women are expected to perform and which mitzvahs we have a right to say women do not have to observe. So we have a general rule. The Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. If you have a mitzvah that is time-bound, that can only be observed or fulfilled in a certain limited amount of time, then we would assume that that is something that women do not have an obligation to fulfill. Now, of the 613 mitzvahs, I guess it's not a good question, because of the 248 positive commandments of mitzvahs that we're supposed to observe, how many would you say that women are exempt from based on this concept, based on this principle? Right? So there's a whole discussion about this, but the truth is, when you break it all down, there's only like 7 or 8 mitzvahs that are the rule. And the Rambam says there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. We have so many time-bound mitzvahs, which of course women share the obligation with men. It's a very limited number of mitzvahs that are in this category of mitzvahs where we would say that a woman would not have an obligation to fulfill. So, although we say that any time-bound mitzvah in general is something that a woman does not have to observe, there are a number of exceptions that are mentioned explicitly in the Gemara, although they are clearly time-bound mitzvahs. So say, for example, the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim, Sadi Tes Amud Beis, the Gemara tells us as follows, Lo yifchusu lo me'arba kosa shel yayin. The Gemara says that we have to make sure that we provide everyone in the community with 4 cups of wine when it comes to Pesach. Now, of course, this is something that is a time-bound mitzvah. You can drink 4 cups of wine on Tuesday evening when it's in the middle of Shvat or it's in the middle of Adar, but that has no meaning or significance. You have to do it in the time of year when we are supposed to be celebrating Pesach. So the Gemara says we have to make sure that everybody in the community has the ability to afford 4 cups of wine. Then the Gemara tells us, what about for women? Should we assume that women share the obligation in having the 4 cups of wine on Pesach or not? Says the Gemara, yes. Nashim chayavas ba'arba kosas. Women share the obligation of 4 cups of wine. Mishum sha'af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. Because we assume, what is the reason why we drink 4 cups of wine on Pesach? The reason why is because we want to commemorate the great miracle of our salvation from Egypt so many generations ago. So now, would you say that that was something that was limited to only the men? Or that's something that the men and the women both shared equally? Of course. The men and the women were both in jeopardy. Their lives were almost destroyed. Many, many Jews are being killed. And therefore, when God saved the Jewish people, the men and the women were both included in that miracle. And therefore, to commemorate that great moment in Jewish history, we have to drink 4 cups of wine. And men and women share that equally. Makes a lot of sense. What would be another example of that? The Gemara says, when it comes to Megillah, although we know that you have to read the Megillah on Purim, if you take out the Megillah and you read it on Hanukkah, it's really not going to have any significance at all. So we read the Megillah on Purim. Says the Gemara, would women have the same obligation in reading the Megillah as men? Of course, it's a time-bound mitzvah. You can only do it on Purim. But the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah Daf Dalid that women are included in this obligation because af hein hayu ve'oso hanes. Women were just as equally included in the great salvation in the times of the Purim story as the men were, and therefore they have to make a commemoration by reading the Megillah. Something that's maybe far less known is a discussion that the Rishonim have of an additional example. So the Rishonim talk about the following, where they say, would a woman have an obligation to have three meals on Shabbos, or perhaps not? Obviously, that is a time-bound mitzvah. Obviously, you can't say that I'm going to have three meals on Sunday or Monday. I mean, you can. You can do what you want. But on Shabbos, you have an obligation to have three meals. So would a woman share in that obligation, or perhaps not? The Rishonim all say that women have an obligation to have three meals on Shabbos, just like the men. Why? The question is why? So Sham Rishonim say the reason why is because the whole nature of this idea of three meals on Shabbos comes from the great miracle that the man fell for the Jewish people in their traveling through the Midbar in the desert. And therefore, since we are doing this in commemoration for that great miracle, we all were part of that great miracle. Both men and women did not have a refrigerator, did not know where they were going to get food, they did not have a parnasa, they didn't have a means of creating anything, and yet they were in the wilderness, in the desert, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of them. And therefore the Rishonim say, af hein hayu ba'osa hanes, men and women share the obligation to go ahead and have three meals on Shabbos. Most relevant to our discussion at this time of the year is when it comes to Neiros Chanukah. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Chav Gimel, why is all of the discussion about Chanukah in Maseches Shabbos? Anybody know? What? Yes, so the second parak in Maseches Shabbos is called Parak Bame Madlikin, which we say in Shul on Friday night, right? We say a lot of different Mishnayos about what are we allowed to use to light Shabbos candles and what perhaps not. So the Gemara then gets into a discussion in Maseches Shabbos in the second parak. Well, would we say that the guidelines that tell us exactly how we're supposed to light Shabbos candles are also the ones that we use to determine what we're allowed to light Hanukkah candles with, or perhaps there's some kind of distinction. And from there, the Gemara launches into a whole discussion about whether or not these two mitzvahs are the same, or perhaps we should assume that they are different. By the way, the Gemara has a discussion. Should we assume that you should prioritize Neiros Shabbos, or you should prioritize Neiros Hanukkah? So what does it mean, prioritize? You have to do both. When you have Shabbos Hanukkah, you have to light Hanukkah candles, and you also have to light Shabbos candles. So which one should come first? Well, the Gemara wants to know, what happens if I only have a limited amount of money and I can only buy one candle? Should I use it for Hanukkah? Should I use it for Shabbos? So first of all, ask yourself, why not light one and it should count for both, right? Good question. What's the answer? The answer is, the nature of the Shabbos candles is such that we're supposed to derive benefit from the Shabbos candles. That's the point. That's why we light it. The nature of the Hanukkah candles, we say, we're not allowed to use the Hanukkah candles for our own benefit. So these are two separate purposes. And therefore, you can't just light one candle and assume that it's going to work for both, because they have two very different functions. One of them is made to be used. One of them is made specifically not to be used. So the Gemara wants to know which one comes first. If I only have a dollar and I have the opportunity to either buy a candle that's going to be used for a Shabbos candle, which is going to then illuminate our house and allow us to celebrate Shabbos, or should it be used as a Hanukkah candle for this week? Which one should we do? The Gemara says, Ner Shabbos Adif. The Gemara says the Shabbos candle would come before the Hanukkah candle. Why? Yeah? Sort of. So the Gemara says, Mishum Shalom Bayis. Because what is my experience of Shabbos going to feel like if I have no lights on? I'm going to be tripping over the couches. I'm going to be bumping into people. I'm not going to have a comfortable time. Mishum shalom bayis. Shalom bayis doesn't always mean between a husband and wife. Shalom bayis means we want there to be a positive atmosphere in the house. And therefore, if a person is not going to have a candle that they're going to be able to benefit from, the whole experience of Shabbos is not going to be a positive one. And therefore, we assume that that would come first. Even though the Rambam says that Neiros Chanukah is mitzvah chaviva, and it's so important, and we have to go out of our way to make sure we observe it properly, when it comes in contrast with the obligation of Neiros Shabbos, we assume that Neiros Shabbos would come first, and that would override the obligation of Neiros Chanukah. I'm going to leave you with an interesting question in a minute when we get a little bit more into the discussion. Yes, you had a question?
Yes. very not smart question, but
no such thing.
A Havdalah candle. That's
yeah.
Intertwined. It's more than one candle. So it's one fire, but it's coming from different sources of energy, so to speak. Could you count that as Shabbos and Hanukkah?
A Havdalah candle? What do you mean?
Yeah, the Havdalah candle.
Yeah.
I mean, if you light that, that's like many candles that come together and form right. fire. Could you use that as to light Shabbos candles and Hanukkah candles?
No, because they're all intertwined, so it's one flame. Yeah. There is a discussion in the Gemara whether we would assume that if you, let's say, have a bowl and you put in floating wicks into a big bowl of oil,
yeah.
and now you have different flames coming out, they're all coming from the same source of energy. They're all coming from the same source of the oil, but you have different flames. So then maybe there's what to discuss. But here, where all of them come together to be one, that would be something that would all be considered as one. Okay? So now, let's get a little bit further. So as we mentioned, the Gemara says, women share the obligation in lighting Neros Hanukkah, and you should all make sure that you have the opportunity to set up a Hanukkah candle somewhere on this campus, and to light. That's an obligation that we all share. Now the question is, Amir Toshem, you're all going to get married, right? Sounds like a good plan. Amir Toshem, you're all going to get married in the right time to the right boy who's going to respect you and treat you so beautifully and wonderfully as you deserve. So the question then becomes, do you continue to light your own Neros Hanukkah once you get married? Or do you say, no, once you're married, you and your husband are considered one unit, and as long as your husband lights, that would be sufficient. This is not a feminist question. This is a question that was asked in the 1600s and the 1700s, where they want to know, what is the nature of the obligation of Neros Hanukkah? Do we assume that women have an obligation, and therefore, even after they get married, they should continue to do that? Or do we assume, no, once they get married, the nature of the whole story will change? So this is a big discussion between the Machzis HaShekel and the Elia Rabba and the Mishneh Berurah. They all have differing opinions. The surprising conclusion of the Mishneh Berurah is, the Mishneh Berurah passed away in the 1930s. The Mishneh Berurah is of the opinion that we say a concept of Ishto Kegufo. We have a concept which is very limited in scope. The Gemara introduces us to this idea. The Gemara says there are certain people who, when it comes to a Beis Din, when it comes to a court case, so if you're going to call someone on the witness stand, and that person is by no means impartial, the person has a vested interest in one side, how seriously are you going to take their evidence? How seriously are you going to take their testimony? You know, of course, you're coming to share one side of the story because you're very friendly or because you're a relative. So we disqualify your evidence. The Torah tells us there are certain people who are automatically disqualified from testifying in a court case. Anyone here ever been to jury duty? I assume, right? So, you've actually been called on a case?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what happened?
I was in court for 3 days.
So there's a process.
Oh, yeah, they ask you a lot of questions.
They ask you a lot of questions before because they want to make sure that you don't have any
bias
in either direction. If you did, they would disqualify you because that's not fair. How do we have a judge who's going to sit on a case if you have a bias against this person? So I remember my father, it's like such an interesting thing. My father, when he gets jury duty, even though he can get out of it because he has whatever he does, all of his responsibilities, he says, no, this is my civic duty. And he goes, and every time he goes to the grand jury, and every time without fail, he's called onto a case, literally. Every time. Most of us go, you're in and out of 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and you're finished. No, with my father, for some reason, he's always called on a case. So my father said he was once called on a case, and then once you're chosen as a juror, so then they start asking you further questions to make sure that you don't have any bias. So there was some disagreement between a store owner and someone who came there to order some food, and something went wrong. I'm not sure, nothing major, not a major case. And they disqualified my father. So he stood up and he said, why was I disqualified? Like, you didn't give me a reason. Why was I disqualified? Which most people would say, thank you for disqualifying me, I'll go home. So he was very offended and he said, why was I disqualified? They said, well, the person in question who's having this disagreement, this dispute with the store owner is a Muslim, and we assume that you have a natural bias against him. My father said, like, I'm extremely offended. What do you mean? Like, that's discrimination. I have no natural bias against anybody. So he's a Muslim, and therefore it means I hate him, therefore it means he should lose the case. If he's right, he's right. If he's wrong, he's wrong. What does one have to do with the other? They disqualified him anyway. They said, now you're a rabbi. It means you have a natural predisposition to be biased against a Muslim who comes in front of you in a court case. And I think that that's very incorrect. It's not true. Tzedek tishpat amisecha, right? We have an obligation to be truthful people It doesn't matter who's standing in front of us. We can't have a bias. We have to be people who are honest and who are going to look at something objectively and come to the right conclusion based on the evidence that's put before us. So here, the Gemara does say in Maseches Sanhedrin that there are certain people who are automatically disqualified. We assume you have too much of a bias and therefore you would not be able to testify for these kinds of people. So says the Gemara, Ishto Kugufo. Let's say we have somebody who is a relative of a certain man. So he's a very close relative, and therefore we would say you are going to be disqualified from testifying in a Beis Din in a court case when we're dealing with a question about this man, about this individual. What about if now the court is looking into his wife? The man himself has nothing to do with it. His wife is now on trial for something. Would we say that you are now disqualified from testifying against his wife? Or would you say, no, I'm not related to his wife. I'm related through marriage, but it's not really him. It's not really her. I'm related to him. So the Gemara says, no, we have a concept called Ishto Kugufo, the same way that you are disqualified from testifying on the man because you're a relative of his, so too you're disqualified from testifying against his wife or for his wife because you are just as related to her as you are to him. It gives you a little of a perspective of what marriage is supposed to look like. Ishto Kugufo means they are equal partners. They represent each other. And therefore, if you're off limits for one, means you're off limits for the other as well. So that is a concept that is limited to Hilchas Edus, to the laws of a Beis Din, to the laws of a judiciary committee figuring out who is qualified and who is disqualified. That is the only place, I think, where we find this concept. And suddenly the Mishnah Berurah and others transfer it into our halacha with regard to Hanukkah as well. And they say, we have this concept of Ishto Kugufo. And that is why certain people are disqualified from testifying in a Beis Din. And as a result of that, the Mishnah Berurah says, when it comes to lighting Neiros Hanukkah, we assume as long as either the husband or the wife light the Neiros Hanukkah, that would be sufficient. There would be no reason for both of them to light because it's considered like they are one unit. And once one of them lit, that would suffice. That is what the Mishnah Berurah says. My father writes in the name of Rav Soloveitchik that he did not agree at all. He said, what does one have to do with the other? Would you say Ishto Kugufo when it comes to blowing the shofar? Would you say like, oh, my ears heard the shofar and therefore my wife's ears who are at home didn't hear anything? It's as if we both heard it? That doesn't really add up. Doesn't match up. We wouldn't say this by any other mitzvah observance. We don't say that just because one of the people in this pair, in this spouse, is doing a mitzvah, doesn't mean it's as if both of them did it. We say, you need to do it, and you also need to do it. So how come when it comes to this mitzvah, we would assume that both the husband and wife are going to be subsumed under one lighting because of Ishto Kugufo? Sounds like a very interesting application of a halacha that never really finds itself really having implications when it comes to any other mitzvah observance throughout the year. Question, yeah. So therefore you're saying what?
So therefore I'm saying it shouldn't apply.
Right. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. You're thinking correctly. Right? He said that it shouldn't apply. But others disagree. Others feel like, no, we can extrapolate from there to other areas of halacha as well and say, Ishto Kugufo is an overarching principle that applies in other locations as well. That's what they say. Question? You got a question? No? Okay. So let's move on. There is a general rule with regard to mitzvah observance throughout the year. The Gemara says in Maseches Ksubos on Daf Nun, that hamevazvez al yevazvez yoser mechomesh. You read these stories about, you know, in the 1800s, they lived in some small town in Europe somewhere, and nobody had an esrog available, and nobody knew what they were going to do, and somebody went out of his way and spent, you know, 10,000 rubles, whatever it was, an exorbitant amount of money to get an esrog, beautiful story, and they passed it around the whole neighborhood, and everybody was using it. Great, wonderful. Would I have an obligation to do that? Does the Torah really expect of me to spend that much money in order to fulfill my mitzvah, says the Gemara, no. There is a maximum amount that we assume a person is expected to spend when it comes to the observance of mitzvahs. So say, for example, I live in a community and I'm not able to get a lulav and esrog. I don't have to pay $500,000 for somebody to send it to me from who knows where. I would not have an obligation to do that. What is the maximum amount, says the Gemara? Hamevazvez al yevazvez yoser mechomesh. You shouldn't spend more than 1/5 of your assets to observe or fulfill any mitzvah in the Torah. That's what the Gemara assumes. However, the Gemara says there are two exceptions to the rule. What are the two exceptions to the rule when we would say a person is expected to spend even far beyond one-fifth of their assets? So the Gemara says the two exceptions to the rule are Neros Chanukah and Dalet Kosos. Which, by the way, both of those are only rabbinic obligations. Both Neros Chanukah, obviously, is only Midrabanan. It came along much later on in history. It was not in the days of the Torah. And also the obligation of drinking four cups of wine on Seder night is not found in the Torah either. Both of those are rabbinic obligations, and yet you have two rabbinic obligations, Pesach night, drinking the four cups of wine, Chanukah, lighting the Chanukah candles, and we would say that because of these two rabbinic obligations, I would be expected to spend more than a fifth of my total assets to fulfill those mitzvahs. How can that be? Why would that be the case, yeah?
How does this fit with the Ner Shabbos being
Adin? Oh, so here's the question. You ready for my question? Here's the very famous question. This is a question that was asked to all the Talmidei Chachamim of the last generation. Rav Soloveitchik was asked this, and Rav Shach was asked the question, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. They all had a discussion about how to figure out the answer to this question. You have to hold on to the thought for a second. Here's the question. The Gemara says, if I have a toss-up between spending my money for Ner Shabbos or Ner Chanukah, which one should I do? Shabbos. Why? Because Shabbos is Mishum Shalom Bayis. The Shabbos candles are going to enhance the ambiance of Shabbos, and that's better than Neros Chanukah. Good. Now what happens? Comes Erev Shabbos Chanukah, and I only have $5 in my pocket. So I only have an opportunity to buy either Neros Shabbos or Ner Chanukah. So what would you say I have to do? You have to buy Ner Shabbos. But in order to light Neros Shabbos, I don't have to spend all my money. Correct? To provide myself with a Ner Chanukah, I have to spend all the money I have. Even if I'm going to go broke, I have to spend everything. So now I'm going to spend the $5 on the Neros Chanukah. Once I bought the Neros Chanukah, I'm supposed to use it now for Shabbos because Shabbos comes before Chanukah. But if it was only for Shabbos, then I shouldn't spend all the money. Am I making any sense or is it too complicated? It's a little bit of a circular logic, but it's a fascinating question. Yeah, you got to look into it. What?
What do people say?
It's a great question. It's something that's just it's thought-provoking. It's something to think about. I can send you some stuff later. But it's really an interesting issue. Interesting issue to think about. Yeah?
I know this isn't true. I mean, I don't think it's the right answer, but since, like, maybe for the fact that these two are both... Oh, interesting. I was going to say that these two are both mitzvos, they're one on, implying that for Zohar, it's that you should spend more than a chomesh, but...
No, the Gemara says that...
Yeah, I know, sometimes.
The opposite. The Gemara says... For any mitzvah, even a biblical mitzvah, you shouldn't spend more than a fifth of your assets. All of a sudden, it comes to these two strange examples of Chanukah candles and Pesach night, which are both wonderful times of the year, but suddenly we have an expectation to go above and beyond. What is that about? So my father writes in the name of Rav Soloveitchik a very beautiful interpretation to explain it, where he says as follows, Ubibir ha'inyan. Let's read it together, number hey, the fifth entry here on the sheet. Everyone with me? Okay. Ubibir ha'inyan. Al pi hashkafa hayanira. He says, based on the hashkafa, it would seem to be as follows: the bechol shar mitzvos lo chibasan haTorah lehisnayik baofen mufraz umugzam. When it comes to our religious observance, Hakadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to be exaggerated or extreme. Very important lesson. God wants us to be measured. He wants us to live life in moderation. We should be thoughtful. We should be careful with how we spend, with what we spend, with what we do, and how we do it. We all need to live lives that are careful, that are calculated, that are deliberate. And therefore, as a result of that, they gave us a framework. And they said, the framework is, don't ever spend more than X amount. Because spending more than that is considered unreasonable. It's considered to be beyond measure. That's considered to be too extreme. A person's going to spend all their money in order to buy Shabbos candles? That doesn't make sense. That's not the expectation of any of us. Va'ad kedei kach lo chivasan haTorah. The Torah had no expectation of us to go to the extreme. Achein b'mitzvos habaos l'shem persumei nisa. What is unique about these two mitzvahs? of drinking the 4 cups of wine on Pesach, and of lighting the Hanukkah candles. What's unique? What's the common denominator? Both of them are Mishum Persume Nisa. Both of them are to highlight the great miracle that happened so many generations ago. In both cases, we make a bracha she'asa nisim lavoseinu. Right? On Hanukkah, we make a bracha she'asa nisim. On Pesach night, we make a bracha asher ga'alanu v'ga'ala savoseinu mimitzrayim. We highlight the great miracle. U'ki'ilu anachnu meramzim lo. It's as if we are hinting and suggesting. Bayamim ahem azman azez. Rav Soloveitchik says, when we talk about the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, and when we talk about the mitzvah of Pesach night, drinking the 4 cups of wine, these are things that commemorate great, extreme miracles, extreme times. God doesn't like to break the rules of nature. Generally, He wants the world to run naturally. Things should just go the way they are. Every so often, He has to break the rules of nature and make a miracle happen, because the times call for that. We are asking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, She'asa nisim lavoseinu, You did miracles for our ancestors, for our forefathers, by Yamim Bahay, Azman Hazem. We hope that you'll do miracles for us in this generation as well. Says Rav Soloveitchik, if we're asking God to go beyond His natural, comfortable means of what He normally would do, then we have to be willing to say to Him, we are prepared to go beyond our natural and normal expectation as well. We are willing to go out of our way and do things that we normally would not do, because we are asking and demanding that of you. So if we ask on Chanukah, we want you to go beyond, we want you to do miracles for our generation, take care of things that are generally beyond the rules of nature, then we are willing to say to God that we will do the same. And that, says Rav Soloveitchik, is why the Gemara assumes that only by these two mitzvahs alone do we find this expectation that a person should be willing to spend even more than the requisite amount for any other mitzvah that they would observe throughout the course of the year. That's his suggestion. I think it's a beautiful idea. But it's something to consider. And that is why the Shulchan Aruch does say, the Shulchan Aruch comes to tell us what the Gadan is. Look here, number above. But the Shulchan Aruch says, Tzarech li'izar mi'od v'hadakas ne'eras Chanukah, v'afilu ani ha'misparnes min hatzdakah. Even if you have a poor person who lives off of charity, shoel u'mocher k'suso v'lokeach shemen lahadlik. He has to be willing to sell his clothing. He has to be willing to give up everything in order to provide himself with the Hanukkah candles. Now, we hope it will never come to a time where a person has to actually sell his clothing. We hope somebody will have mercy on that person and be able to provide them with what they need. But that is the extreme that the Shulchan Aruch writes here. One really needs to go out of their way. It's important to remember that before we light the Neres Hanukkah, we are not supposed to engage in other activities. So the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah. Look at this Gemara together. Fascinating Gemara. It's number Zion here. Misha Baba Derech. Somebody who's traveling. Happens to be Sukkis, and he's traveling. V'lo haya biyado lulav litol. And you don't have a lulav, because you're traveling. L'kisha yikanas lebeso, when you get to your destination, when you get home, yitol al shulchano. What does it mean? Yitol al shulchano? You should stand up on the table and shake the lulav and esrog.
In his house? What does it mean?
What does it say? L'kisha yikanas lebeso, when you come home, Yitol al shulchano. You should shake the lulav and esrog on your table.
In his property.
In his property, you should say bebeso. So what's al shulchano? So Rashi says, what do you mean? You think the person's going to stand up on the table and shake the lulav? What does that mean? Of course not. What it means is, says Rashi, im shachach v'lo nata kodem achila. What's the first thing you want to do when you get home? I haven't had a hot meal. I've been traveling. It's not like today. I mean, I happen not to eat the plain food ever. I don't know. Anybody here? Let's take a little survey. You go on an halal flight. Anybody here eats that breakfast? Anybody? Tell me.
I like a little bread.
It happened to be when I just got to Israel now, last week. So I offered someone a ride. There was a taxi coming to pick me up. So I said to this couple that was on the plane with me, you're going to Yerushalayim, you want a ride? Come, jump in the back. So they came. So we were talking along the way. I said, I'm so hungry. Could we just stop somewhere along the way? I needed to get a drink. He says, what do you mean? You didn't eat the food? I'm like, what? You really eat that stuff? He says, I love it. I love plain food. That omelet, it's amazing. I'm like, what? So, all kinds of people. So I guess some people like it. Take a little survey. Anybody here enjoys that? No.
I'll eat it. I'll
what?
Yeah, I'll eat it. Plain omelets I'll eat, but like dinner or lunch I'm never eating.
Once we're on the topic, I'm going to turn this off for a second and ask everyone an interesting question. So back to what we were saying. The first thing that you want to do when you land somewhere is you want to have a good meal, right? You had a long trip. You didn't eat the airline food, or maybe you did, but you're hungry. So what do you want to do? You want to eat something. That's the natural first thing that a person does when they get home. Says the Gemara, no, but it's Sukkos. You sat down to eat, and you're forgetting about your obligation to shake the Dalet Minim. You didn't have a Dalet Minim with you. You didn't have a Lulav and Esrog, so you forgot you have an obligation. Says the Gemara, Yitol al Shulchano. You have to stop eating right away. You have to take the Dalet Minim right now, because we're afraid you're going to forget all about it. This has to be your priority. This is the same halacha we find in Siman Taf Lamed Aleph by Bedikas Chametz, where it says, before you do the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, you are not allowed to engage in eating. You have to make sure that Bedikas Chametz is the priority, and you have to check the house for chametz, and only afterward are you able to eat the meal. Now, sometimes that's difficult. Sometimes you're not going to start the Bedika till all the kids are home from school, or till everybody gets home from work, whatever it is. So you have to schedule it properly. You have to make sure that you keep that in mind. The Rama writes in Hilchos Purim, the same thing. Before you lay in the Megillah, you have to make sure that you don't engage in eating. And the same halacha applies here by Neiros Chanukah. The Magen Avraham says, you have to make sure that you light the Neiros Chanukah before you eat, and you are not supposed to engage in the eating of a meal before performing your mitzvah. Now, that is not always so simple, because you have to keep in mind that at this time of the year, the time to light Neiros Chanukah is already at 4:30 or something like that. And let's say your family members are not going to come home from work till 7 o'clock at night. Does that mean you're not allowed to have a meal between 4:30 and 7 o'clock at night? That's a very, very difficult thing to be mindful of and to think about. Now, the problem is, let's say my kids get home from school at 4:30, 5 o'clock. The spouse doesn't get home from school from work till 8:30 at night. So if we're all going to wait to light Neiros Chanukah together at 8:30 at night, that's going to be very difficult to not serve dinner to everybody before we light candles at 8 o'clock or 8:30. So of course that's a problem. So what's interesting is, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes that in that case, the children should light Neiros Chanukah with their mother, and they should all sit down to have dinner. And later on, when the husband comes home, he'll light at 8 o'clock. Now, that's very not exciting, right? On Chanukah, when we all want to sit together and do our thing, it's not so exciting to do that. But that's what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes. And again, every family has to figure out what works for them. For chinuch purposes, it may not be the smartest thing that they should light separately, but you have to just be aware, be mindful of the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. If the event were to start around the time that you have to leave before you light candles, and you can't light the whole time, do you think there could be an exception so it wouldn't look rude that you don't eat in front of people?
Yeah, so it says if you set a reminder, first of all, even though I'm not going to be home, someone is lighting for me in my house. So the real obligation, the Gemara says, is ner ishu beso. Every house has to have a menorah lit in it. Someone has to light on my behalf. So my wife is going to light anyway in my house. That's number one. Of course, we all try to light our own, which in normal circumstances, everybody does light their own, and I will. So here, you set yourself a reminder if you have to go somewhere. Anybody here have a wedding over the course of Chanukah? So this is a big problem. What do we do about weddings? What do we do about a wedding? I have a wedding. The wedding starts at whatever time it is. I don't have time to get home to light Chanukah candles before I leave. So best case scenario is if you light Chanukah candles at the Zman, at 4:45, let them last for however long they last, a half an hour, 45 minutes, and then you leave to the wedding. That's not always practical. I'm being Misada Kedushin at a wedding on Thursday of Chanukah next week, and the Chassan and his family reached out to me and said, what are we supposed to do? Now this is a major question. It's a major question because usually the Chassan and Kala come to the hall way before the wedding begins, so they're already there at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. To tell them to lighten the hall is not really their house, right? You're not sleeping there. All you're doing is eating there. Does that really make sense? Is that really something that is acceptable? The Chassan and Kala are going to go to a hotel that night. You can't light candles in a hotel. That's not something that's really practical. What I have seen is some hotels do allow for a scented candle, right? Some hotels, in order to add to the ambiance of the beauty of your room, they give you a scented candle. So you can use that for Neiros Chanukah. There's nothing wrong with that. And especially if it's the first night of Chanukah, I would say if it's the eighth night of Chanukah, to light 8 scented candles and leave them on the table, it's probably something the hotel is not going to be happy with. And you have to keep in mind, if the hotel is not okay with it and you're in their property, you're not allowed to do anything that legally or by contract, you signed up that you weren't going to do. You're not allowed to do that. That would be going against their wishes, and that is not something that is acceptable. So you have to think about these things. What I did tell the Chassan and his family was, the wedding happens to be, for anyone who's from my neighborhood, the wedding is in Sephardic Temple, which is literally 2 minutes away from this person's house. So I said, you're going to be in the hall taking pictures, doing your things at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, getting your makeup done, whatever everyone's going to be doing. Okay, at 4:30, you tell all the camera crews and everyone else, we're going home for a half an hour, we have to light Hanukkah candles, we'll be back. It's fine. What's the big deal? Get to the hall a half hour earlier. Come at 12:30 instead of 1 o'clock. Take care of all the things you need to do. You should just be mindful of the fact that you have to light Neros Hanukkah and plan accordingly. So that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do. It's not such a big deal. But it doesn't always have that easy of a solution. If you are the guest at a wedding, that's a very, very big question. Yeah?
What if the hall isn't close to the house at all?
Yeah, so that's a big question. So I think a few things. Number one, the Shulchan Aruch says in general, if it's hischil v'heter, if let's say I start a party, it's relevant also when we have, let's say, Hanukkah parties, right? So sometimes a family will get together and they'll all have a Hanukkah party in one person's house, and I travel an hour to get to the Hanukkah party. I'm not going to get home tonight till 9 o'clock at night when we're finished. But now it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we're having a Hanukkah party and we're all eating food, we're sitting down to a meal. So what do? So number one, the Shulchan Aruch says if it's hischil v'heter, it's mutter. If I start all of my party way before the zman, way before the time sets in for when I have to light the candles, then there would not be a problem because I was already in the middle of this, and then the time to light the candles came along, and I'm already busy with something else, so therefore it wouldn't kick in. So I have to set myself a reminder. I have someone who is who said, I forgot who it was, but someone reached out to me this week, they were going to Florida for some kind of NCSY retreat, some kind of weekend, I forgot what exactly the nature was, and they said they're not going to get back from the flight to Florida until, I think, 10 o'clock at night. And the concern was they can't light there because their hotel room already is, I think they have to check out probably at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. Their flight is going to be at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They're not going to get back here till 8, 9 o'clock at night. So what do they do? So I said, you know, we all have phones. Set 5 reminders on your phone. Set an alarm for 10:30, 11 o'clock, 11:30, 12 o'clock. If your flight is delayed, you're going to get one of those reminders along the way that when you get home, you should light Hanukkah candles. That's what you do, right? Aside from the fact that also somebody is lighting for them in the house already, their parents are going to be lighting, so they really have the obligation of Neru Shubesa is already covered, but we all try to light our own Hanukkah candles as best as we can, as much as it's possible. So that's what I suggested. That's what I told him. Okay, I see we're out of time, but Amir Tashem.